From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Late last year, President Bush requested congressional funding for a major escalation of covert operations against Iran to destabilize the country's leadership. The requisite number of Democratic and Republican congressional leaders agreed to the funding. The president's request was made in the form of a highly classified document known as a presidential finding. This story was broken by Seymour Hersh in the current edition of The New Yorker. Hersh has been reporting on the possibility of an American military strike against Iran since April 2006. On today's Fresh Air, we talk with Hersh about the expanded covert operation in Iran, who signed off on it, and why it may bring us closer to a military strike. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest Seymour Hersh has broken the story of a major escalation of American covert operations in Iran, designed to destabilize the country's religious leadership. Late last year, Congress agreed to a request from President Bush to fund the escalation. The president made the request in a highly classified document known as a presidential finding, which is legally required when a covert intelligence operation gets underway. CNN reports that White House, CIA, and State Department officials declined to comment on Hersh's story. Recent Israeli military activities have led to speculation that Israel may be preparing to attack Iran's nuclear facilities. Fears of an Israeli attack on Iran's nuclear program have been credited for today's record high price for a barrel of oil. Iran's Revolutionary Guards say that if Iran is attacked, it will impose controls on shipping in the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. Seymour Hersh's article, Preparing the Battlefield, is in the current edition of The New Yorker. Hersh has been writing about a possible military strike against Iran since April 2006. He won a National Magazine Award for Public Interest in 2006 for his New Yorker pieces on intelligence and the Iraq War. He broke much of the Abu Ghraib story, and he won a Pulitzer Prize for his 1969 reports on the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. Seymour Hersh, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Glad to be here.
So you write that Congress has agreed to provide up to $400 million for this major escalation of clandestine military operations in Iran. What is the goal of these clandestine military operations?
Well, theoretically, you could argue the goal is, as outlined, what Congress did is it was given what they call a finding by the president. The president, in order to get money for covert operations inside Iran, has to go to Congress and explain what he's doing. And in the document, as explained to me, and I write about this, of course, obviously, in the article, it's for the continuation of the same old game, which is for years now, we've been trying to destabilize the government, the religious leadership, the Shia government of Iran. We also have been working and putting an awful lot of money into various dissident groups inside Iran, Baluchis and the Kurds, et cetera, and hoping that they would gin up stuff. But I also write here that a significant escalation in this program, in the general program, because it is complicated, we now for the first time have very elite units of the most aggressive special operations unit in the team in America, the Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC they call it. These are the guys, basically hunter-killers, you might call them, who have been asked by the president to lead the attack on what we call high-value targets, that is potential terrorists, et cetera, around the world. And their mission is to find them, capture them, I guess, if possible, and of course kill them if also possible, if you can't capture them. They're very, very tough, competent guys, and they are now operating secretly from Afghanistan into Iran.
Do you know what targets they're going after?
What I know is this new program involving the Joint Special Operations Command includes a list. The operatives, the Americans in the country, have been given a list of targets, as I write in the magazine, from the vice president's office, a specific list. And in some cases, they include a nuclear scientist. And my guess is that, of course, we'd much prefer to capture one. But also, you know, you're prepared for every eventuality. What makes the story that I've done in this week's magazine so interesting is that Congress actually, in order to give the money or arrange for the money to be delivered to the CIA and the other agencies, it has to get under law a presidential finding. The president of the United States must go to Congress under law and give him a piece of paper saying what he wants. And this paper included a phrase that rattled the Congress very much. It was they asked for permission for the Congress, the White House did, for the American troops to be involved in quote unquote defensive lethal activity, defensive lethal. And one difficulty I have is that the classification of stuff is so high, and writing about it is so difficult, and I have to be so careful about what I say, Terry, because I don't want to hint at all as to who talks to me. But I can tell you that there were senior members of the Congress very upset by that kind of language. And it was that sort of language and that sort of concern among some people in Congress that eventually got to me. And that's how I sort of worked my way around and discovered that indeed a special task force has been set up, I think as early as February of this year, in Herat province, which is on the border in Afghanistan, on the border of Iran. And from that province and from that base, a task force base, American troops and supplies and communication gear and others have been pouring into various facilities, or I guess you might even say covert, more covert bases inside Iran or those of our allies, the dissidents who work with us, who we pay to work with us. And from there, I think we're trying to recreate or create a major, major operation that can have some impact. And if you anticipated the next question, what is the ultimate goal, as explained to me, this is an administration, the Bush administration, with about 6 or so months left, and they really want to do something about Iran. And I think the thinking was, and this is the vice president who's directly involved in this any of these operations with the Joint Special Operation Command. He has a separate direct back channel, I guess you could call it. He communicates directly with people in the field, I'm sure through aides. He's not on the phone necessarily himself, but his office does. And the goal is to provoke enough trouble and hurt enough people and cause enough damage and create enough chaos so that the Iranian government does something aggressive in response. And then you look like you have a country in some sort of acute turmoil. And then you may be, perhaps you can have what the White House wants to call a casus belli, a reason for going in and maybe attacking the country.
So what you're saying here is that this covert operation, as far as you can tell, has the ultimate goal of leading toward a possible military strike and leading toward regime change.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question of that. The strategic thinking behind the goal, behind the mission, is to get in. And by the way, in the article, I also write in some detail that there has been a significant spike in internal dissent inside Iran, just from the public newspaper accounts. And, you know, this is a controlled media. It's pretty interesting that there's so much openness about the fact that almost every other day there's another shooting, bombing, a mosque was bombed, a colonel was killed, assassinated. You're seeing a spike in violence that I can't tell you that our operations are the cause of that, but it's not an illogical inference. I mean, nobody's told me that, but that's the general assumption. The strategic thinking is get this country roiling, get it going, and maybe the leadership there will make the mistake of taking armed action against a Baluchi group or an Azawahi group. You know, the Azawahi Arab is a dissident group or minor group, about 15% of the population, and maybe get the country, the leadership of the country, to start acting kinetically, you know, with its own bombs and missiles, and then you've got something going. That's the thinking. It's very crazy.
One of the many things that surprises me about this story is that the members of Congress who needed to sign off on this did sign off on this. And I say I'm surprised only because the war in Iraq is so unpopular now, and so many political leaders are trying to distance themselves from it. And yet, what the strategy is here, trying to covertly get minority groups to rise up against the regime, destabilize it, and overthrow it, it sounds so similar to what the Bush administration tried in Iraq, and what didn't really work until we sent troops in there and just did it with the American military. And that has had such a problematic outcome. So who had to sign off on this in Congress, on this presidential finding?
It's interesting because one of the themes of the article I wrote, of course, is that it's pretty astonishing that under the law, when the president has, they call this technically, as I said, a finding, he can, if he chooses to, only brief that information or provide that information to the congressional leadership. That would be the Speaker of the House, both and this is Nancy Pelosi and her Republican counterpart, the Majority Leader in the Senate, Mr. Reid, and his Republican counterpart, and the Republican and Democratic chairs of the Intelligence Committee, only 8 people in all, 4. Of them being Democrats, and the Democrats being Rockefeller, who's the chairman of the Senate Committee, Congressman Reyes from Texas, who chairs the House Committee, Intelligence Committee. Nancy Pelosi is involved, Harry Reid, and they all were provided this finding. And one of the points that I make is that no objection. And I was told essentially that one of the views was this is a it's going to be a Democratic year. The election looks good. And we don't want to give Bush any reason to start complaining that the Democrats are against fighting the war on terror. There was some sort of political fear. I was also told by another ranking member that we, you know, these things, these notifications of a finding, we don't pay much attention. We just sign off. And it is astonishing to me that there is absolutely, when the leadership of the Congress gets one of these findings, there's absolutely no meeting of the minds. There's no meetings permanently. Nobody gets together to discuss it. And there was just no effort made by Congress to stop this president from doing an operation in Iran, whose main goal is contrary to that of the presumptive presidential candidate, Barack Obama, who's been talking and being criticized for talking about it, about talking to the Iranians and finding some way to defuse it. And the public, by the way, totally supports, according to the polls, using diplomacy before using force in Iran. And so why the leadership of the Congress? I think one thing for sure, they never thought there would be stories like this in The New Yorker about what they did, and there haven't been in the past. That's maybe a factor. And of course, Congress ultimately has the great weapon. They have to fund these programs.
My guest is Seymour Hersh. His article, Preparing the Battlefield, The Bush Administration Steps Up Its Secret Moves Against Iran, is in the current edition of The New Yorker. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Seymour Hersh. In the current edition of The New Yorker, he breaks the story that President Bush has asked Congress for up to $400 million for a major escalation of covert military operations in Iran against the regime, and Congress is in the process of dispensing some of that money. The 8 congressional members who have to sign off on a presidential finding, how much power do they have to say, no, we're not going to go along with this? And how many of them would have to say no?
Well, you know, about 3 years ago, I wrote a piece in The New Yorker about the White House interfering through a finding, proposing to interfere in the elections in Iraq. And it was stopped because Nancy Pelosi, then the senior Democrat, but not the majority leader, she was in a minority, said no. She was a minority member, one of the 8 in minority who was briefed, the Gang of 8, they call it, and she said no. And I wrote about it at some length because it was so astonishing. I didn't get much cooperation from her office, obviously, but the fact is she stood up and she said no, and it didn't happen. If they did do it, they did it under the table. And in this case, the other factor here is that eventually if they do say yes and they don't do anything, it has to be the money has to go through the House and Senate Defense Appropriations Subcommittees, which are the most important committees in terms of the Pentagon and the government. The Pentagon can't run without getting money from the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee. And here you have the 2 ranking Democrats, Mr. Obie from Wisconsin and Mr. Murtha from Pennsylvania. And as I write, they and others were upset by this finding, were upset by the fact that it included, as I mentioned, this language about lethal defensive activity, and they couldn't get to the bottom of it. And the reason they couldn't get to the bottom of it is when the CIA and other intelligence agencies want to do a covert, that is, a covert operation is one in which if our men and women are caught, they can't say, oh, I'm just in the government. They can be treated as a spy. They have no connection to the government. And covert operations under the law must be briefed to the Congress. But military operations, clandestine operations, in which if you capture a bunch of military guys and they sort of take off their outer shirt and behind, under their shirt is their uniform, they are treated as prisoners of war. And they do not have to, and the White House believes, and the White House's rule and the way they look at the law is that the President of the United States doesn't have to tell Congress anything about military activity, even clandestine activity. That's not covert. And the president has commander-in-chief. He can just do what he wants under the Constitution.
Well, and the way you make it sound in the magazine, it sounds as if what President Bush has done is intentionally intertwine covert CIA activities with covert military activities, because the president believes that as commander-in-chief, he doesn't need approval for covert military activities. And the CIA activities, if they're kind of rolled into the military operations, he could say, well, it's part of the military operation, so he doesn't need any kind of approval for the CIA part either. Do I have that right?
It's very, very, very complicated what they've done. The escalation, this $400 million, asking for as much as $400 million, comes about because it's sort of like a last hurrah, you could put it. And the only reason they went back with the finding is that the Joint Special Operations Command, the commandos, are going in now, going in with high-value target lists from the vice president. And they really don't have language skills. They don't know who's who. So they had to get the CIA to come help them. The CIA takes a look at this project, and this is literally what I write about. The lawyers there take a look and say, whoa, we got in trouble enough over the interrogation and rendition stuff that's still going on now, you know, for which their law wasn't clear. And so they said, we want a legal finding. So that's why the president, they have to write a what they call a defensive lethal finding. That's why this whole issue arose. All of a sudden they're saying, the White House is saying to the Congress, oh yeah, we need approval. Maybe we're going to do a little shooting here or there, just in defense, but we need the money. And it is totally complicated. For Congress, it's almost impossible to ferret out. They don't know who's doing what. That's one of the things, points of the story. I quote Mr. Obi, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, and I quote him by name as saying, you know, look, Cheney wants to do stuff, and you know, he's going to want to do stuff until the end of his game, you know, until it's all over. And I don't really know what's going on. It's an astonishing thing for a chairman of an Appropriations Committee who also sits on, you know, the ranking member of the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, which sees everything in secret. It's how to describe it? Out of control.
The congressional leaders who had to sign off on the presidential finding that increased our covert operations in Iran, you're making it seem like they didn't put up any resistance at all, which really surprises you. Could it be that President Bush told them something that made them think, well, this is really justified, this is really the right thing to do based on this information that President Bush has divulged in secret to us?
No.
Why do you say no?
I mean, I don't mean to be so blunt, but in fact, it wasn't a complete lack of resistance. There was some resistance because the president's finding, the document he has to submit, talked about a lethal defensive activity, which meant lethal, killing people. There was an enormous amount of resistance to it. There was no sense that I could obtain in my conversations with people that there was any overwhelming, overarching justification that nobody could talk about. There was, and how do I say this? When you're talking about a presidential finding, you're talking about one of the more secret documents in the government. And if I'm able to get access to that, it would be hard-pressed for me to think that something that would justify what they'd done wouldn't be known to me, too. Wouldn't be known to some of the people talking to me. And I had no suggestion of this at all. In other words, no suggesting other than this was an ongoing thing, and there was a significant, in this finding, a significant escalation of the language of the finding that was very troubling, and yet nothing happened. They approved it. And it's very hard, by the way, for a leader of Congress to stand up and take the heat from the administration, stand up and say, this is wrong, we're not going to do it. And so they don't do it. And, you know, that's not my definition of democracy.
Do you see this as another example of the Bush administration's attempts to expand executive power?
Looks like a duck, walks like a duck. Are you kidding? Of course it is. It's totally an expansion. It's the president of the United States saying, I can send special forces troops anywhere in the world. It's literally worldwide is the way he looks at it. I can send the Joint Special Operations Command. And these are guys, sometimes they wear uniforms, sometimes they don't. And they're great, by the way. Let me just say this. I think the guys doing the missions and the overwhelming percentage of their officers are terrific people. And many of them are as troubled perhaps not as much as I, but trouble enough. Believe me, I know that there's a lot of concern inside about some of the crazy things they're asked to do, but they do it. But so here we have a president whose ultimate goal is to completely obviate the Constitution. And if you ask me my personal opinion, and this isn't something I wrote, this is something I believe is true, it's going to take a lot more work. I don't think what they've done in terms of diminishing oversight or making oversight less valuable, I don't think it's just a question of taking advantage. I don't think it's just a question of outmaneuvering them. I think it's basically at some point after 9/11, the president and the vice president and some of the lawyers set out to, and the word I would use is sabotage the procedure, to say, we don't want oversight. If you remember, after 9/11, they began wiretapping. We know all that now. And now we have a situation where it turns out that military forces can be sent anywhere with the list of people to assassinate or capture, and nobody has to be told anything about it.
Seymour Hersh will be back in the second half of the show. His article, Preparing the Battlefield, about the Bush administration's escalation of covert activities in Iran, is in the current edition of The New Yorker. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from Bantam Books, publisher of Conquistador, A History of Hernan Cortez, King Montezuma, and the Last Stand of the Aztecs by Buddy Levy. From Angie's List, providing first-hand consumer reviews on local service like plumbers, painters, movers, and now doctors. And from the American Psychological Association and its 150,000 members, bringing the science and practice of psychology to daily living. At APA.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we ask Seymour Hersh if he thinks the Bush administration's recent escalation of covert operations in Iran brings us closer to a military strike, as we continue the discussion about his article, Preparing the Battlefield, in the current New Yorker. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with journalist Seymour Hersh. In the current edition of The New Yorker, Hersh reports that the Bush administration has expanded its covert operations in Iran, with the goal of destabilizing the Iranian leadership and undermining its nuclear program. The money for the operation was requested in a highly classified document called a presidential finding, which must be issued when a covert operation gets underway. The requisite number of congressional leaders approved the funding request. Hersh has been writing about a possible military strike against Iran since 2006. He won a National Magazine Award for his reporting on intelligence and the war in Iraq. Let's talk a little bit more about what some of these covert operations appear to be. You write that It's an escalation in funding minority religious and ethnic groups who oppose the Shiite regime in Iran. And you write about reservations that some people have about this, which includes that one of these groups is a Sunni fundamentalist group.
The Jandala, the Baluchis, they're both
elements. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah, and that some of the people in this group are related to Al-Qaeda and other Islamic extremist groups. Ramzi Youssef, who was convicted for his role in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, is a member of this group. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who is believed to be one of the planners of September 11th, a member of this group. So we're covertly funding these Sunni extremists to work against the Shiite government in Iran?
Here's the way to look at what we're doing. We go into a country about which we don't know much. Just turn it around. Suppose the Iranians decided to come to America and they were looking for groups to go after. And suppose they discovered, here's this wonderful group known, this very tough group known as the Sons of the Revolution. These are guys, Southerners, who have a flag, and they can't even get their flag, the Confederate flag, even in the Deep South in Georgia. The law, the government won't let them put this flag up. My God, what a great group to approach. Let's approach the Sons of the Revolution. If I'm an Iranian trying to reverse, I'm doing the reverse psychology. Let's approach them because they look like they'd be great dissidents and people who might work against the country. When, of course, as anybody knows, these Southerners are the most patriotic and loyal. Despite their wacky views about the Confederate flag, they get them to work against the central government would be very, very hard. That's how silly, in a way, it is. I talked to one expert, Vali Nasser, who's on the teaches up in Boston and is on the Council of Foreign Relations and knows Iran very well. And he said that basically the same thing in much more sedate language than I'm using about how Iran is a country that's pretty solid. The leadership is pretty solid. They're not popular, but they're Shia. And it's not a country that's going to be fractionalized. It's going to break up along ethnic lines like the Sunnis and Shia have inside Iraq. It's just we're barking up the wrong trail is the point I'm making.
But another group that you say we're funding through this clandestine operation is the MEK, the Mujahideen Khalq. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
We call them the Khalq, just make it easy, yes.
Okay, but this is a group apparently that's on the U.S. list of terrorist groups. So why are we funding them?
Oh, we've been doing it for years. This is a group that was very much anti-Iran and doing a lot of terrorism against the Iranian regime and also attacking Western in the 80s, and they were on everybody's list. But now that they now live in Iraq and they're still working against the Iranian government, and all of a sudden they're, we like them now because they are willing to go inside. They've been going inside Iran. They're on a border area for years, causing all kinds of trouble. We've been giving them arms and cash. And I'll just tell you what people have told me. Most of the leadership we know have been taking our money, and an awful lot of them have bank accounts in London. They're just, taking our money, thank you very much, and cashing it. But they do a lot of crazy stuff inside. They've been doing it for 4 or 5 years. They are a terrorist group, and that is a little awkward for us. I can also tell you this, is that they've also had some training in America covertly. We've taken teams of them into America and give them training in the state of Nevada. I do know that. This is a Bush administration for which there's no rules. The enemy of our enemy, no matter who you are, is our friend. And if you're Jandala in Iran and you have ties to the Taliban and to Al-Qaeda, but you're willing to go up against the ruling mullahs there in Tehran, we'll deal with you.
Let me ask you what I think is the bottom line question here. In your analysis, does this bring us a step closer to a military strike against Iran?
Look, our submarines are there. Our destroyers are there with cruise missiles aboard. Our aircraft are there. Our soldiers are there with the targets. We have to go on the ground because there's some anti-aircraft and anti-missiles structures that we can only take out by American guys going in and dropping a hand grenade or a gun and, shooting the people running. You can't bomb them from the air. They're fortified. Our soldiers are ready. The planning is ready. They've exercised. They're all set. 10, 12 hours away if the president wants to say go. I also firmly believe this president, particularly if Obama's elected, I think the chances of him doing something, of course, will go up depending on the politics. If McCain is elected, I think it's fair to say Bush would probably think McCain will do it anyway. Bush's worry is that the next generation, the next leadership will not have the courage he has as he sees it, the political determination. He was just talking the other day in Europe about how I do things and I stick to my guns no matter how popular or unpopular these actions are. And he's talking about Iran when he says that. This finding, this new idea that the president to come and want and ask for as much as $400 million from the Congress, this came late last year, just at the time that the intelligence community's national intelligence estimate on Iran was being promulgated, the one that said, stunning the White House, that the evidence is clear that since 2003, Iran has it stopped then in 2003 its nuclear weapons ambition. That's what the NIE said. And the White House has been walking back that cat for 6 months now. Almost everybody in the administration all parrot that. By the way, so does McCain, so does Hillary, Clinton, and so did Obama in various speeches. They all have accepted the rule that the notion that Iran is intent on making a bomb when the NIE says no. But the timing of the Bush request, of this huge money increase they asked from Congress, you can't separate that timing from the NIE. He certainly knew when he started that process what the NIE was going to say. He'd known about it for months. I do know people that worked on the NIE, and I can tell you right now, they leaned over backwards to be sure they were careful, given all the problems the community has had, the intelligence community has had because of its lousy or perceived lousy reporting about the WMD threat from Iraq. And so they wrote a very good report that simply, at this point, is pretty much trashed by everybody.
Okay, so you're writing about a major escalation of covert operations in Iran against the regime there. You're suggesting this maybe takes us a step closer to a military strike against Iran. At the same time, it looks like Israel's the country that's really poised to do it. Israel just had a bunch of military maneuvers that experts say looks like they were preparations for a strike against Iran. Israel's very worried that if Iran does develop a nuclear weapon, Israel would be the target of it. Israel has attacked other nuclear programs with airstrikes in the past. What are you hearing about the odds of an Israeli attack against Iran?
Well, the Israelis are certainly bristling, and I was a little skeptical about all of a sudden every American newspaper suddenly gets a briefing on the Israeli exercise a few weeks ago. And clearly that was the whole publicity thing was coordinated with us. I mean, I do.
With
think
us, you mean with the Bush administration?
Oh yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. There's just no question. There's an incredible close tie between us and the Israelis on almost all, everything, and just the way the story came out. All of a sudden, a lot of briefings were given to a lot of reporters, and it was made a big splash. And it certainly was a provocative story that the Israelis are doing it. I can just tell you what, again, sticking to what I know, I do know that Cheney has said repeatedly. First of all, Israel doesn't have the capability. To really strike Iran and be effective, you have to. It's got to be a pretty shock and awe, if you will, to go back to a 2003 phrase. You've got to hit an awful lot of nuclear facilities, that are, some of which are buried very deeply. Natanz, their basic enrichment facility, is something like 75 hard feet underground. It would take a rain of bombs to pound away at it to get to the building. And you have to have an awful lot of very kinetic, a lot of bombing. You've got a lot of sites that you want to destroy. If you want to set back the Iranian program 5-10 years, you got a dozen sites you have to hit. They're all protected by anti-missile batteries, aircraft. So before you can hit any of those, you first have to go in and strike their missiles. That's why I was mentioning armed forces on the ground. In some cases, the missiles are protected by rocks. You got to go in physically with troops. You got to take out their missiles. You got to take out their radar. You got to take out their first round wave of defenses so you can go in without too much loss. And Israel simply doesn't have the aircraft power to do it. They have cruise missiles. They can be submarine launched, but they only have 5, 6, or 7 submarines. We, on the other hand, are loaded to bear. We've got stuff, and we've been moving stuff. I'm not telling a great secret, I don't think. We've been moving cruise missiles into that area for months now, probably more than that. And Cheney's position is no way we're going to let Israel do it. Because even if whatever Israel does, we're going to be blamed for it anyway, whether we had anything to do with it or not. So since we're going to be blamed for it, and since Israel can't do it right, we'll do it. I do know that said. That doesn't mean it's policy. That is what's being said.
My guest is Seymour Hersh. His article, Preparing the Battlefield, The Bush Administration Steps Up Its Secret Moves Against Iran, is in the current edition of The New Yorker. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Seymour Hersh in the current edition of The New Yorker. He breaks the story that late last year, Congress agreed to a request from President Bush to fund a major escalation of covert operations against Iran. We've talked several times, you and I, on the air about the Bush administration's plans for Iran. And you said that when we spoke, I think last year, you said that the initial justification the Bush administration was using for regime change in Iran, you know, covert actions that could lead to regime changes in Iran, was that they're building, you know, nuclear weapons and we've got to stop them. Then you say the Bush administration became convinced that that wasn't going to really go over well as justification among the American people, that the American people weren't going to buy that. So then the justification for regime change in Iran became, well, Iran is supporting efforts against the United States and Iraq. Iran is supplying weapons to the insurgents and IEDs to the insurgents in Iraq. So we have to do regime change in Iran because there's such trouble in Iraq. So what is the justification now?
Well, it's pretty muddled. One of the things, they have gone back quite a bit. They did go try very hard to make the case that Iran is killing American boys. It didn't work. There's been a lot of good reporting. I think in the article in the New Yorker, I cite a New York Times piece in April that sort of did a definitive look. And there's just no empirical basis that look, there's certainly a supply of weapons from Iran going into Iraq. There's been smuggling and border sales going on for God knows how many hundreds of years. That hasn't stopped. But there's and I have talked to people inside this government. There's absolutely no clear evidence known to the American government that the leadership of Iran has any interest in provoking trouble with the United States in Iraq by sending in people to cause mayhem or kill Americans. There's just no evidence for it. Why? Because Iran right now, through the Shiites that control the country, the Malikis and others, the Prime Minister Maliki, has a very close relationship with the Shiite government of Iraq, the one that we set up. Why would Iran want to, they're not interested in shooting themselves in the foot. So that hasn't worked, that plan. That idea, that was early this year, if you remember, too, they were pushing it. Let me back off and say they have 6 months left. They need
to generate. They being the Bush administration.
Yeah, they need to generate some public support for a bombing. It would be suicidal politically to do it without public support. And that, I think, does get you back to what they're trying to do with the special operations and the covert operations and clandestine operations inside Iran, which is to trigger some sort of disturbance that would cause Iran to do something dumb in response, and maybe we could then go in and the public would be more supportive of us going in that case. The whole goal is to get public support because, I don't think this president cares much about John McCain. Why would he? Despite what they say, he'd be prepared to risk cause damage if he thought he could get away with it. But the fact is, as long as the public opinion polls show that so many people, as I say, over 70% in the last Gallup poll, I cite it in the magazine article, as long as so many people in America are sort of, who cares, don't think it makes sense to go bomb, not very interested in it, as long as you can't generate a lot of heat about it, I don't think they can really do it. But the program, the idea behind this operation, in essence, is to generate heat.
One of the paradoxes here is that as President Bush is escalating covert activities in Iran, as Israel appears to be considering a military strike against Iran, and if that happens, you say America would have to be a part of it either immediately or eventually. You know, the Bush administration finalized the negotiations with North Korea. North Korea has destroyed its nuclear facility in response to that agreement. And, I mean, that was worked out with a series of carrots and sticks. But, you know, it ended in negotiation. And President Bush is refusing to negotiate with Iran unless Iran stops its nuclear program. But that's what the negotiation would be about. That's what the negotiation was about with North Korea. Does that seem paradoxical to you?
No, it actually frightens me a little bit that he's working out something with North Korea. Because you see, then he has a model. He can say, look, there are rational people. I'm a rational person. We could even get somebody like the pretty much off-the-wall leadership of North Korea to agree to something sensible. and look what happened. We've done something good. This isolates Iran more in terms of the way I look at it. And it's not, this is not my thinking. This is the thinking of others that are know a hell of a lot more about what's going on. If he really is serious about Iran, getting North Korea off the table moves him closer, if you think about it from the way I'm thinking about it, because it gives him a better bargaining position. It's not he that's the trouble. It's the government of Iran. Because look what he did with the North Koreans.
So if Cheney is the strongest advocate for a military strike against Iran,
If he is. I think he is, but I don't know.
Okay. But I can't help but wonder if Cheney or whoever else is considering a military strike against Iran, what they make of how things have turned out in Iraq. Because some of the justifications and some of the tactics we've used so far in Iran seem to parallel Iraq. And I can't think of a lot of people who are happy with the outcome so far in Iraq. Plus, we've spent so much money and have deployed so much of our military resources, including, you know, lots of the National Guard in Iraq, that, you know, could we even afford to tie up more in Iran? But anyways, I just can't help but wonder how Iraq is influencing people like Vice President Cheney now.
You just have to listen to what they say, because what they say is fascinating. We're actually winning. We're turning a corner. And we got rid of Saddam Hussein, and by any chance, that's a plus. Just listen to what they say, because in their world, Iraq is okay. They've done something useful, and it's going to be great. We're turning a corner. We're going to solve the problems. The surge, quote unquote, worked. Never mind that the country is completely destroyed physically and that ethnic cleansing. They, if you just read and listen to what they say, it's upbeat. So they don't see this mess they've created as a mess. So the argument that why would they expand the war? We're not doing so well into yet another country. Is that they're not sure we're not doing so well? In the article I write about Admiral Fallon, Bill Fallon, who was forced to resign after publicly criticizing the idea of bombing Iran. Again, it's Cheney, and what I say in the article is for me it was very interesting, because once you got into it, you discovered one of Fallon's problems was. He was the commander-in-chief of the Central Command in charge of not only Iraq, but also Iran and also Afghanistan. And son of a gun, there were some secret operations going on inside Iraq and inside Iran, rather. The special forces were doing stuff, and he couldn't get into them. And he made a big fuss about that. He wanted to know what was going on. As somebody who believes in the chain of command, Fallon certainly does. He's in his 60s, been around a long time, was commander-in-chief in the Pacific where he didn't have this problem. He gets here to Central Command, and this guy Cheney's running all sorts of stuff. And so he clashes with Cheney and loses. That's the way I look at it. I actually got one of Admiral Fallon's friends, a retired four-star general named Jack Sheehan, a very, very bright, honorable guy, to say on the record, which is rare for a retired officer, four-star officer, to say, look, Fallon's trouble was he was insisting on knowing all the secrets, and Cheney didn't want him to know all the secrets. Cheney's power is pretty persuasive.
My guest is Seymour Hersh. His article, Preparing the Battlefield, The Bush Administration Steps Up Its Secret Moves Against Iran, is in the current edition of The New Yorker. More after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Seymour Hersh. In the current edition of The New Yorker, he breaks the story that President Bush has asked Congress for up to $400 million for a major escalation of covert military operations in Iran against the regime, and Congress is in the process of dispensing some of that money. Based on what you know of the Iranian government and based on what you've heard from diplomats who have dealt with the Iranian government, do you think that we could actually negotiate a deal in which Iran would stop its nuclear program and comply with the agreement?
Not this government, not the Bush administration.
But what about the Iranian government?
Well, the Iranians, I don't think, have any interest in talking to Bush.
I see what you're saying. They wouldn't negotiate.
Yeah, not with this government. I think the next government, if a Democrat gets elected, if Mr. Obama gets elected, I think you could see talks go very quickly. Because, frankly, the guys I know on the inside, in the special forces, high up in the DOD, high up in the intelligence community, if you push them hard enough, they'll tell you that Iran has actually been more of a force for stability inside Iraq than negative. Yes, there are negative aspects. Yes, there are arms flowing in. There are certainly people coming across the border with evil intent. You know, those things happen all the time. But in general, the Iranians are, they invest, the trade with the, particularly in the south of Iraq, between Iran and Iraq, is over $1 billion a year in trade. There's a lot of religious connections, particularly for the Shia in Iraq, who are very drawn and tied to. They make pilgrimages back and forth. There's an awful lot of foreign investment now going on outside of Iran, but Iran led the way into Iraq. And Iran has every interest in keeping Iraq stable. In a funny way, they're almost our partners. We've given them the country, and they have an interest in stability. We could certainly talk to them. The bottom line is you're not going to resolve the Iraqi question, which is really difficult. Just pulling out troops isn't the answer. I mean, I guess I'm all for that, of course, but you've got long-term social, economic, political problems, and we have a moral obligation to this country. You know, we've done a lot of damage to it. So in order for us to extract ourselves in a rational way and not leave chaos, you're going to need the Syrians, the border country, the Jordanians, the Kuwaitis, the Iranians, all of the border countries working very hard together. And this government simply can't do that. They don't have any credibility.
One more question. You've drawn a picture here in which you think that there are members within the Bush administration, most likely Cheney being at the forefront, who would like to overthrow the regime in Iran and are considering using military force to do it. But at the same time, the Bush administration is on its way out. There's a lot of people within the Pentagon who oppose a military strike. A lot of people in Congress who oppose a military strike against Iran. So how much power would the Bush administration really have in the last few months of its time in power to do something as dramatic as attacking Iran?
If you had told me, Terry, that 6 months ago George Bush would have gone to the leadership in the Congress, democratically controlled Congress, and said, "Guys, I'd like to get a chit for about $400 million to mess around inside Iran and see what I can do." And he got it without a question. I would have said impossible. So where is the political courage? No matter where you are, one of the great shocking disappointments to me is the lack of political courage, even among the military, even among the guys I talk to who are really upset and will never go public. So few do. And so I don't think you can underestimate the power of the bully puppet of the office. This is a man who's president of the United States of America. And he's going to be a very active president, I'm afraid, until, 11:59.59 seconds on January 20th, 2009. And if you remember, he came into office after a bitter fight. He didn't have a plurality in terms of the vote. The American vote. He got, once the Supreme Court put him in, he put his foot down and he was running as if he'd won 60-40. So he's going to be an aggressive president until the end. I don't think there's any question about it. And the closer he gets to the end, I think one of the reasons you're seeing this sort of enormous escalation of special forces operations inside Iraq is he's getting close to the end and they are breathing more heavily. They'd love to grab an Iranian nuclear scientist who can reveal the secrets of the bomb, the secret bomb that they think exists. And so that's what they're looking for, among other things. Who's going to stop him? Who's going to stop a president if he decides in the last week of October. And I will tell you, I've had people that I've talked to in the military system talk about October surprise. There's a lot of concern by a lot of Americans and certainly a lot of Israelis about an Obama administration, whether he would be at all interested in doing anything significant about Iran. And so those people who think this is a serious threat, those people, the Bush and the Cheney crowd, and those people with him, the neoconservatives that are still all over this government, if Obama looked like he was winning or looked like there was after he'd won, you might just seriously still have a problem. And I can't help but say the fact that we have this major, major escalation, this president getting a chit for $400 million from the Congress, or at least asking that much and not being told no. I mean, it's just amazing to me. He still has the ambition.
Seymour Hersh, thank you so much for talking with us.
I don't know why you thank me. It's some sort of sadomasochism, but you're welcome.
Seymour Hersh's article, Preparing the Battlefield, is in the current edition of The New Yorker. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Joan Tui Westman, Sam Brigger, Patty Leswing, and Jonathan Minhivar. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from Barnes & Noble, presenting daily book reviews, author interviews, and more in the Barnes & Noble Review, online at bn.com. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. CDs and transcripts of Fresh Air are available from Burrell's Loose at 1-877-21-FRESH. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, your credit rating, how it's compiled, how it may be used against you, the errors that may lower your score, and how to fix them. We talk with Harvard Law Professor Elizabeth Warren. And we hear from Jason Bateman. He co-starred in Arrested Development and Juno and stars with Will Smith in the new film Hancock. Join us for the next Fresh Air.